To promote my new flower shop, I had one place print my business cards, another print my brochures, and a third, my signs. Now my roses aren't red, my violets aren't blue, my geraniums look dead, and I don't know what to do.
Staples can help your business stand out with signs, banners, and brochures that are a true reflection of your company. And now with Staples, spend $50 or more on print and marketing services and get $5 off your next in-store purchase.
Now my business is blossoming and I'm spending less green.
Exclusions apply. In-store only. Ends 6/23/18.
Good morning, sports fans. Fill up that coffee cup and that bowl. Sit back and relax. Because live from Colorado, it's time for the Sports Offensive.
Well, good morning, sports fans, and welcome to the next episode of the Sports Offensive. We do want to wish everyone out there a happy Memorial Day weekend. It's always a big celebration time here in America, so hopefully you'll be getting out there and appreciating what the celebration is about, but also enjoying some extra time with the family. Thanks again for tuning in. We are happy to have you with us for the show. I am your host, Mark Demas. If you haven't already, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. It really does help us out. You can find us at both under the handle at the SPT Offensive. We are on Instagram under the handle the Sports Offensive with underscores between the words. And you can find out about us, listen to the show, and get sports information on our website at thesportsoffensive.com. You can catch us live here on Blog Talk Radio or through our website. You can also get us on demand through Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, iHeart, and a subscription through iTunes Podcast. We do like to thank our show supporters. There's Idiot Cult T-shirts, Health Guru EK Fit, the Bay Area's Best Space Savers in Operation Organize. You can find all of these companies and their links on our website. Feel free to call into the show at any time, 929-477-3204. Shout out that we have listeners all over the globe, and we couldn't be more happy. We've got listeners in the U.S. and Canada and North America, both Colombia and Brazil and South America. We're in Europe, in France, Germany, the U.K., the Czech Republic, and Norway, in Africa, in Nigeria, in the Mideast, in the Mideast and Asia, Pakistan, India, and Nepal. In Asia, we are in Japan, Vietnam, Cambodia, the Philippines, and Taiwan, and also in Australia. So we just wanted to give a huge shout-out.
I'll tell you what, I think we got Uganda on the line right now. Uganda, are you there?
We're here.
Yeah, we're here.
All right, thank you so much for being on the phone lines with the Sports Defense for today. I got to ask you guys were the darlings of –
We should probably tell our listeners who we're talking to here.
All right. So, introduce yourselves, please.
Okay. I'm Pete Ginniger. I'm the head coach for Uganda Lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Holman, the general manager of Uganda Lacrosse. And just so you guys are clear, we both were not involved in 2014, so we don't want to take anybody's credit.
No problem. Yeah, no problem with that at all. I met the guys.
But I did. I was on the coaching staff at Israel in 2014, so I had a chance to watch Uganda play. And there was a tremendous amount of hype leading up to 2014 because it was such a unique thing.
That's awesome.
And they really were the life of the party there. And I watched them play twice, and I watched them. Beat Korea, and I watched them beat Argentina, which was really, a pleasant surprise for everybody, because going in, I don't think there were any expectations of winning. So coming away with two wins really was a highlight for them.
Well, I'll tell you what, being there in 2014, there was no expectations of you guys winning at all. And when you guys won, I was the first one out there on the field shaking the guy's hand. And we treated him to dinner, not me personally. It was Lacrosse Talk Radio. This is Sports Offensive. So we have to really actually thank you guys for being a part of Uganda Lacrosse.
Well, thanks very much. It's for me, and I won't speak for Matt, but for me, this has really become a labor of love. It's been life-changing for me. I've been on the ground in Uganda for almost 50 days over the last 8 months. And every time I go, I have a very difficult time getting back on the plane coming home, because what they're doing there in terms of just their enthusiasm and their preparation for the World Championships has been outstanding so far. I could be wrong. Well, it's a 10-hour difference from the West Coast, so I'm sure they've just finished up their day of practice. So hopefully they're listening, but they've done a great job.
I think Mark wants to jump in here.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. Number one, so it sounds like you guys have American-sounding accents. So are you natives of the U.S.?
Excuse me, I didn't hear that question.
Yeah, no, he's asking if we're natives of the U.S. Yeah, Pete lives
yes.
in Palm Springs, and I live in San Diego, California.
Oh, okay.
We're both born and raised here. Yep.
I guess I was
you were talking earlier about it being 92 degrees today in Denver, you know, in Colorado. And I'm telling you, in Palm Springs, people are wearing UGG boots if it's 92. So just
I grew up in Redding,
it's a little balmy day here.
Redding, California is where my hatred of heat came from. I grew up there and played, you know, youth softball and youth soccer in 98 to 110 degrees all summer long. It's basically 100 degrees from, I think, about April 30th through about September 15th. And when I moved to Colorado, I thought it would be wonderful because I thought, you know, it's snowy and cold and rainy and weather.
Yeah, right.
No one bothered to tell me it's got more sunny days than any other state in the entire country and that it's actually hot most of the time. So that was kind of a...
Yeah, let me ask you a question. At the World Games in 14, it was uncanny that every afternoon at 4 o'clock, the clouds would roll around and it would open up and pour rain for 2 hours every day. I've never seen that before.
I'll tell you what, JoJo, Wardrummer, and me were hidden under a tent when the hail came down at 4 o'clock every day.
I was there. I remember.
So how did you guys end up getting involved with Uganda?
Well, for me, I have been a college – I was a college coach for 40 years. And I've coached all over the country. And then I got involved with Israel lacrosse about 7 years ago. I was an assistant coach with Israel lacrosse. I had been over to Israel a number of times. I coach in their Premier League in the summer. And every summer for the last couple summers, Israel had given basically two scholarships for Uganda players to come up and play in the Premier League. So I had the privilege of meeting a couple of those guys, and a couple of those guys played for me in the Premier League, and we just got to talking a little bit, and I said to them how proud I was of them, how they did in 2014, and kind of like just off the cuff said, hey, if you guys ever need any help, let me know. So that kind of started the conversation, and then we just had a little more conversation, and it went from being kind of a, well, I'll let you know kind of thing to just about a year ago, they offered me the position to be the head coach for Uganda lacrosse, and I jumped at it. So that's how I came in. And then what I really needed was a great general manager, and Matt's the best I know because he can really get stuff done. And I think he probably hates me for asking him, but I asked him. So.
Excellent. Well, hey, you know, it's all about who you know, not what you know, right? So it sounds like you guys both know your sport quite well. So you talk about needing a great GM. Does GM or team building in lacrosse, does it work similar to, let's say, football across the rest of the world? And I'm talking about soccer football, not American football.
I would say no. I mean, team. I'll let Pete speak on the team actual player building, but when you say team building to me, I'm thinking organizationally, and I'm thinking always what are we doing today that's going to affect us, you know, in the coming years.
I see. I was thinking more of roster like creation.
Oh yeah, that's definitely coach's area, and I you know, having been a lacrosse coach, we're both ex-coaches and or coaches and administrators in the game and lifelong kind of attachment to lacrosse, but I've tried my best to stay out of anything coaching wise, and that's Coach Pete's area, and let him and his staff take care of that. And I try to take care of the off field big picture stuff.
I
mean, the unique thing about Uganda lacrosse is, you know, the sport there is still so new, and it's and they started playing about 7-8 years ago. But you know, you ask the average Ugandan what lacrosse is, and they'll look at you cross-eyed because they just don't know. But it's getting a lot of it's getting a lot of press there. It's getting a lot of television interview time there. More people are learning about it, and especially in Kampala, because our players are literally walking around with their equipment all day long, and people see it. And you know, every time I'm there, I'm wearing my Uganda lacrosse shirt everywhere I go. I take these what they call boda rides. You know, these little motorcycle taxis, which are, you know, you take your life in your hands, and it's, but I think it's a thrill of a lifetime. But you know, so people are looking all the time and asking, like, what's lacrosse and this and that. But it's really, you know, it's still fledgling there, and it's growing. I think we have some tremendous athletes playing the game there right now. I said in an interview months back that I thought our athletic ability would stack up against the best teams in the world athletically, just from a pure athletic standpoint.
I'm going to tell you guys one thing really quick, because 2014 was an eye-opening for me. I actually shook every player on that team's hand. And the fact that they were so happy to be in the United States, I was taken back. I mean, it was unbelievable just to see how they were, like, here in the United States.
Well, you know, it's been, for them, it's sort of been an odyssey. I think they view lacrosse, number one, they love the sport, but they also view it as a journey for them. I mean, it's taking them to places, or will take them to places they've never been before. It'll take them to places they may never be again. Uganda is a very interesting country, and it opened my eyes up when I learned about all this. It's got about 20 million people. Of the 20 million people that live in Uganda right now, 50% of those 20 million are under the age of 16. It's an incredibly young country. And of those, you know, under the age of all the folks under the age of 16, there's something like 1.6 million orphans in Uganda.
Wow.
So you're seeing, you know, when you go there, it's not just about lacrosse. And I went there thinking this is going to be like a business trip. I'm going to go. I'm going to teach lacrosse. I'm going to coach lacrosse. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to come home. I'm going to come relax by my pool, and everything is going to be great.
Right.
When I got there, from the minute I stepped on the ground there, I knew this was going to be different. From the ride from the airport to Kampala is life-changing because you'll never be on a ride like that again. And just the people there are just incredibly warm, incredibly friendly. It's very heartwarming to me when players don't dare call me coach. They call me dad. And to me, that's just the most heartwarming thing. I've coached thousands of guys over my career. I've never had players call me dad.
Yeah, that's
great. And they're incredibly coachable, and they hang on every word you say as a coach.
So
you got to make sure you get it right.
For our listeners that are kind of
new to the sport,
maybe they're an ignorant American, to really give an idea of what Uganda is like, can you kind of give us an idea of, like, the political structure and, like, maybe the economic situation for the people that live in that country?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it to you in a nutshell what I know and what my perception is.
Sure.
Everybody that I've talked to about Uganda has always said to me, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, well, Idi Amin. Well, yeah, that was a really dark time in their history. And we had the opportunity last time we were there. I was there in December with Ivan Cohn, one of our other assistants, with Francis Donald, another assistant of mine. And, you know, we got taken on a tour of the Uganda National Museum, which shows all about their history, and it was a very interesting day. They actually showed us Idi Amin's car, which was sitting on cinder blocks with no tires, and it was just blown out. But that was his car. And you can tell that – it's a dark part of their history. but a history they want to talk about.
Interrupt you real quick. Just real quick, there's a lot of background noise where you're at. I don't know if it's possible if you go to a quieter place, because it, with the way the Blog Talk Radio works, it'll pick up the background noise over your voice, and I want to make sure people can hear
okay.
you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sitting in a room, but okay. but, you know, the thing about Uganda is it's a fairly stable country. I mean, I think everybody has this image of Africa and what goes on in some other countries there. I will say I don't feel unsafe in Uganda. I feel very safe there. I think politically they're going through some things, and again, I'm not an expert on it, but I'm talking to some of my players. I think the younger population feels like maybe it's time to ask for a couple political changes. I don't obviously get involved in that. I just listen to what they say. But it's not one of those, you know, it's not on the verge of revolution, you know, or anything like that. It's just, you know, I think it's a democratic country, and people have the right to air what they think. So I think that's what's happening. You know, the country itself is beautiful. It's very hilly. Kampala sits on a group of hills, overlooks Lake Victoria, which is probably one of the most beautiful views I've ever seen. When I wake up in the morning, I look out the window. Where we stay, I have a great view of the lake. And it's you know, it's a bustling city. I mean, Kampala is a big city. It's you know, traffic there rivals Los Angeles. It probably
oh.
works.
Oh, wow. Well, it's the best home following you there.
What's that?
Oh, I was just saying one of the best parts of home has followed you there. You know, you get to have traffic no matter where you go.
Oh.
So,
yeah, but like I said earlier, to me, it's like Disneyland when you get on the boat-a-boat ride. So,
sure.
I always tell them, you know, people ask me about it, like, what's it like being on a boat? I go, get on it, sit down, close your eyes, and hold on. Because, you know, you don't wear any helmets. There's no helmets. There's nothing. You just go. But
and
they'll take you anywhere you want to go.
As well, you know, that you don't have that motion sickness problem. Because, you know, once you start hitting some swells, you know, if they're big enough. And I was going to tell you, when you were talking about kind of going there and the experience and the players calling you dad, I was thinking about, I mean, I love traveling and going to different countries and learning different cultures and things like that. And, you know, you talk about Idi Amin. And when I've gone to Spain, which is one of my favorite countries, and I've gone there a few times, and a lot of the people there are extremely kind and extremely generous. And, you know, they suffered under Franco, who was affiliated with, you know, Hitler for a number of years. And even though that's been done for, you know, multiple decades now, they still harbor their memories of what it was like. And that's, I think that's a huge cause of their massive generosity and kindness. And I'm wondering, from what you've told me about Uganda, if it's kind of the same principle there, that they're so thankful for what they have now that they want to express that gratitude all the time.
Well, I think that's part of it. I think, but also it's in their history too. I mean, Uganda was a British colony. Everybody there speaks English. People are incredibly polite. When you speak to when you speak to the average Ugandan and you have a conversation, it's a very, very civil, polite conversation. Even when you have an argument or things aren't going the way, you know what I mean? Even if it's not a typical argument like you would think, it's still very, I don't want to say proper, but you feel like you can get more accomplished because everybody speaks in a much more civil tone. And that's the thing that struck me there, was just how civil people were. In that sense, we would talk about Idi Amin, and one of the funniest things that I said there was, the players were saying, "Well, coach, you know, are you going to be a disciplinarian to us?" And I said, "Look, I'll do what I have to do to make you guys play the way we want you to play and get the most out of you." I said, "Well, you know, you guys knew about Idi Amin. Well, you can call me Petey Amin." And they just started cracking up. But you know, and then I kind of said, "Well, too soon, you know." But no, they were laughing. You know, they got the message. But yeah, look, you know, these guys are so pumped up to play in Israel this summer. I mean, we've had a really long tryout process in the scheme of things. We've had three tryouts over 7 months, and we finally got down to our final 23 roster last week. And you know, there were some tough decisions to be made, and I think there are some guys there who are very unhappy right now. And there are some guys there that are incredibly happy right now. And really, you know, that decision ultimately fell on myself, and I felt like we wanted to put the best 23 players we could on the field that's going to represent Uganda in its best way and give us the best opportunity to be successful. We set some, I think, lofty goals for ourselves in terms of how we want to finish out the tournament and where we want to be ranked on an international level. I made a public statement that I'd like us to be ranked, you know, in the top 25 in the world. They were 37th after the last World Games. So, you know, we think we have our work cut out for us. I think they're a much better team than they were in 2014. That's having been there and coached them up for a number of days there. But I think it really will come down to, you know, how well prepared are we when we get there? Because athletically, like I said, athletically we can run with anybody just in terms of just being just pure athletes.
Well, and, you know, you got to hope also that the players that weren't able to make the team that were kind of on that bubble, you hope that when you're not able to make the team that that's an incentive to, you know, put a lot of effort into it, put a lot of time into it to improving their skill set so that maybe they can be on the team for the next round. And, you know, hopefully that way you guys can build something over the course of, you know, a number of different years. You can actually build up a huge program that can go into perpetuity.
We take the philosophy with them that everybody that tried out for the national team is a member of the national team. Everybody's part of the national team pool. It's just the fact that the FIL limits us to 23 players. So I can't take everybody to the World Championships. That doesn't mean you're no longer on the national team. It just means for this quote-unquote tournament, you're not going to be on the active roster. Now, if we do something next spring or next year, we'll bring other players. So we really encourage them to stick with the program and to encourage the players that made it and help us become better. Obviously, when you represent your national team, you know, it's certainly a huge matter of pride. So we understand that, you know, there, like I said, there are some guys that are really, really disappointed right now. But it wasn't for the most part, they all worked very hard. We asked them at the beginning of the process to make this a difficult decision for us, and they did that. The hardest thing for us was picking our two goalies. We had three really capable goalies. I think all three of those guys could have been our starter on any given day, and I had to pick two of those three. So you can imagine how the number three guy feels today, and I feel for him, because he did everything we asked of him to do. And at the end of the day, it really came down, from my point of view, it came down to, in essence, like almost not a coin flip, but it was a gut decision on my part who to take as number two. And that says a lot about how hard everybody worked.
So, Mark, I got to tell you, out of Denver, I watch this team. I fed this team. I introduced myself to this team. And I loved every minute of it. I mean, these guys are amazing. These guys are amazing. They are so, I mean, they were so just welcome to come to this country.
When was that that you were able to meet the team?
2014.
Oh, 2014.
Now, these guys, the coaches here, are not going to be part of that team. But I loved every single minute of it. I got to tell you, I really have to tell you, no joking aside.
No, I got you.
I mean, it was awesome.
So are you guys, when's the next time you guys will be heading back to Uganda? I'm assuming that you're not there right now.
No, we'll be going back in early July with the full coaching staff, and we'll have our training camp before we head up to Israel. The one thing I will say also, guys, is I think we've put together probably one of the best coaching staffs overall, you know, aside from the U.S., Canada, Iroquois, you know, England group, you know, the blue group. I think our group of coaches is as well qualified and accomplished as anybody's. You know, we have running our offense is John Christmas, you know, played at Virginia, now runs his own company. Has been to Uganda. We have Francis Donald, who is a player and an assistant coach at Nazareth College, who was over there in December and just did a fantastic job. We have Ivan Cohn. Ivan is an accomplished high school coach and goalie coach. I call him our goalie guru. And Ivan was involved with Israel Lacrosse with me as well. And he's kind of like my right-hand man in terms of making sure that, you know, everything that we're supposed to be doing, we're doing. And then Mike Allen, who is the head coach at UC Santa Barbara, played at Princeton, coached at Towson, comes from a great lacrosse background in Baltimore, was just named to the Los Angeles chapter of the U.S. Lacrosse Hall of Fame. I mean, I am so pleased with our coaching staff, and obviously what Matt's doing is unbelievable. And, you know, I think our coaching staff will do wonders for these guys.
I'll tell you what, I love Uganda lacrosse, and what you guys are doing in the U.S. is actually phenomenal. And I got to tell you, thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, and, you know, you guys want to wish you the best of luck to hitting that top 25 ranking and in the world. I think that would be a phenomenal accomplishment. And you know what? When you guys have your next round of experience with the team, we'd love to have you back on the show and kind of
hear
what has
happened. Mark, why am I not going to Israel right now? I mean, I should be going to Israel.
The one big thing we'd like to just hit on real quick, if we could, is, you know, we have the Uganda Lacrosse Foundation, which is based here in the U.S., and our primary charge is to develop the international game. And we're going to be doing, and Matt, I you know, you can elaborate on this, but we're doing a giving day in a couple of weeks. We still need to raise a bunch of money to make sure we can get there and give the players everything they need and give them the best experience they can. So,
give me the name of that program and then a website as well.
Please, so we can raise money.
Yeah. Sure. The website is ugandalacrosse.org. And just how it sounds. And then what Coach mentioned was our giving day. We're about $55,000 short of our goal to get the team over there and do it the right way. So, and donations are coming in every day, and you can donate now. But we're doing our kind of final push is June 14th. That being a day before all our deadlines have to be met. And we're doing a give day. And again, you can donate online, ugandalacrosse.org. There's a way to donate any way you want. You can always email us at gm@ugandalacrosse.org. And we can do credit cards. Obviously, we're here to receive any type of corporate sponsorships, things like that nature. But, we really trying to get the word out. We'll definitely come back and visit you guys before then or the week of and build that up. And we encourage everybody in the lacrosse community to make a small contribution. And, you know, together we can get this thing there. And one thing we haven't talked about, and I'll just mention it before we take off, is the FIL, Federation of International Lacrosse, is the managing part. You know, they're the manager of these world games, but their ultimate goal is to get lacrosse into the Olympics, which, you know, any player, any coach, you know, would want to see that happen. And one of the mandates for the Olympic consideration is having the sports played on every continent. So that was another reason why 2014 was so huge. And 2018 and especially 2019 are really big years for lacrosse because of these world games. And this being potentially the second year a team from Africa is in the World Games. And then more importantly, next year is the U19 women's in Canada. And they're looking at sending not only a Uganda team, but there's a team probably a little ahead of us, actually, Kenya lacrosse. We'll have a women's team there at U19. So all these, additions are leading up to that ultimate goal and helping FIL get to that ultimate goal of getting lacrosse included in the Olympics. So we really do appreciate the opportunity to jump on your show here with you guys. And as Coach said, you know, we need that extra support. We're coming down to the finish line. We want to make this happen. UgandaLacrosse.org. You can donate today. You can wait till the 14th. However you do it, we love your support. We thank you, and we want to get this team there.
Yeah, folks, we love having you guys on, and we love to support, especially up-and-coming type of sports ventures and things like that, to get more opportunity out there for everyone. So Matt and Pete, thank you so much for coming on. We are certainly going to link you on our page. For all of our listeners that know, it's at sportsoffensive.com. We'll have a special tab on there for Uganda Lacrosse. And Uganda Lacrosse to make a donation for Giving Day on June 14th. Help them to reach their goal so that we can make sure that they've got everything they need going forward. But we'll make sure to link that on our page. We'll also make sure to pump some support for you guys out on Twitter and see if we can help you raise a little bit more funds. How's that sound?
Well, thanks, guys. Like that's great. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate that. And we'll definitely make a stop. And, you know, with this kind of technology we have, maybe we'll be calling you from Uganda at minicamp and giving you guys an update on how things are going. Let the guys maybe say hello.
I'll tell you what, man. That would be a blast.
Have a few Uganda players on there.
Thank you very much for Uganda Lacrosse being on the main show today. So thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yep, guys. And have a
thanks. Have a great holiday weekend, too, guys.
Oh, it's a holiday weekend. I forgot about that.
Hey, I got to turn the TV on right now. There's some games going on.
There's three games happening right now.
We got games, baby.
We got big games.
Lacrosse. We got lacrosse on right now.
ESPN2. So tune in.
Yep.
Thanks so much, guys.
Duke and NC. We got, Albany and, Albany and who? Please tell me.
Albany and Yale is the first game. And,
yes.
And you have
Maryland
in the second game.
Denver, because they lost.
And I lost interest. I lost interest after Cornell got knocked out.
Come on.
Dude,
well,
Cornell.
But I know Matt doesn't want to hear this, but I was glad to watch them beat the Orange. That's all I can say.
Okay, here we go.
So we all love the underdogs. So I guess we get Yale. I mean, Cornell getting knocked down is just that. But Cornell, Yale, and everybody else, Denver, we don't know them.
Okay. Well, anyway, guys, again, thanks so much for coming on. And we'll definitely pump up what we can to help you with Uganda Lacrosse. And best of luck to you guys. And, again, everyone out there, enjoy the holiday weekend. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was fantastic. We want to thank him again for coming on. That was fun. We love to have, people that are in
that
the sporting
or
world
what?
Out there. And, you know, obviously sometimes they're having some great success over in Uganda.
That's something out of our realm of what we actually do. I mean, that was great.
It's always nice to have somebody on from a sport that maybe doesn't get nearly as much coverage or nearly as much attention. So, again, they are at UgandaLacrosse.org. You also said that you can email Matt directly at GM@UgandaLacrosse.org. Again, their giving day is June 14th. So, you know, if you got a few bucks that you can kick that way on this holiday weekend, even if it's just like, you know, $5, $10.
It.
Remember, all money helps when you're trying to do things on such a large scale as, you know, taking a huge team with you to compete. You know, you can ask any college that has had to take their school just from CU to CSU to play a football game. The cheerleaders, the band, the uniforms, the travel, the gas, the coaches, the players. I mean, these things are so expensive. And, you know, when you do well in sports or when you have a chance to be a part of a team, it's a skill that is wonderful to have all throughout life. Being a team player is critically important if you're living in the corporate world or you're working in the corporate world. And, you know, let's help those guys get experience and help, if we can at all, make Uganda kind of pump up to a higher level.
So. Uganda Lacrosse, man, the darling to 2014 World Games. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Hopefully they'll be the Cinderellas of 2000.
Cinderellas of Israel Games.
And what, now, when is Israel Games? Is it this year?
Yes, it's this
when
year
it
in Israel. It's going to be July. Don't quote me on the actual date.
So maybe it's probably about a month after
July,
the giving day.
July.
So maybe July 15th or something.
Yep.
We'll take a look and look that up.
So I really want to bring this up to you.
Well, wait, we haven't done our sports trivia question of the week.
Oh,
did
good
you want to
Lord.
Read that
we,
off?
You know what? We have actually went out of order here. Let's do this. So, you want to
you don't read it?
You want to introduce it?
The question says, who is the only driver in history to win a Formula One championship, an Indy 500, and a Daytona 500?
You realize Cody Unser might not call in now.
Why is that?
Because it's someone her family battles with.
Oh, well, don't give answers away. But, I mean, there's only two really racing families I know of that do multiple leagues like that. I mean, like,
okay,
I know,
what two you got?
Well, the Unsers and the Andretti's.
Of course you do.
That's,
I mean,
that's those are the two names. I mean,
and I was talking to Cody Unser last night for about 3 hours on my phone. So,
and
God,
for people who don't know, who is
so,
that?
All right, Cody Unser is Al Unser Jr.'s daughter. She's in a wheelchair.
Does she work with the racetrack that we have up near the mousetrap?
No.
Okay.
She is, let's see, how can I put this? The Cody Unser First Foundation. She is now, I mean, she lost the use of her leg at age 12. And she has the Cody Unser First Foundation because she lost that leg.
Okay.
And
all
I
right.
know you're looking at me.
I'm just kind of confused where you're going with it.
No, I mean, she is awesome. And then some, her mom is awesome. And then some, her dad. But.
All right. Well, you know, if she's out there and Cody, you want to call in, we'd be happy to have you on. That'd be the first time I think we've ever had a dual interview show. So that would always be fun for us.
We certainly like to have interviews.
And of course, anybody out there, if you want to call into the show, you can get here at 929-477-3204 or Cody, if you're listening, 929-477-3204. Quick reminder that it does help us if you can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Both of those were at the handle at the SPT Offensive, as well as we're at Instagram under the handle The Sports Offensive with underscores between the words. And you can listen to our show. You can listen to it live usually or especially on demand at thesportsoffensive.com. I'm going to try to hop on there here in a second and put this show at the top. But if you go to our front page, you can listen to the most recent episode of all three of our shows. Hopefully we have a few more shows in terms of different shows that we're going to keep adding to our roster. But you can listen to, of course, our flagship here, the Sports Offensive. You can listen to our specialty lacrosse show with JoJo Wardrummer Mares at A Cup of JoJo. And you can also check out, those of you who are sci-fis and nerds, you can listen to the Alien Offensive. That's hosted by me, sometimes has some guests, sometimes it'll just be me. Second episode I'm going to record this afternoon, and hopefully I'll have posts up on that show tonight.
Let's not forget about Nate, because Nate's an integral part of the show.
Right, and Nate is oftentimes on the Alien Offensive. Nate has been working like a dog for about 3 weeks straight here,
yeah.
And him getting time off at all has been nearly impossible, but hopefully that's coming to an end. Sometimes when you take a position of higher responsibility.
Well, Spice Live Catering did that to me.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying, but I mean, I'm talking about, like, this is a big restaurant that he's running here.
Oh, I know.
So, you know, when you have to run a big restaurant and people don't show up, you got to make up the slack. Just like if I'm at work and ops people didn't show up to work, I'd have to do their work on top of mine. Thankfully, that doesn't happen.
Of course
happen
you did.
Because that would be, I shudder to think what that would be like. So today we do have the Indy 500, right? We've got Ed
Indy
Carpenter.
Indy 500 tomorrow. Indy
oh, tomorrow. I'm
yes,
sorry.
Yes, yes. So Memorial Day is where it's going to go off. Ed
so is
Carpenter.
It, well, so is it,
Ed
is it
Carpenter.
Tomorrow or is it Monday?
No, it's tomorrow. It's
Sunday
it's,
of Memorial Day.
Yes.
Okay.
Ed Carpenter. I love it.
And then
Ed
Carpenter
is the man.
So Danica Patrick qualifying at 7th?
7th. Last
and,
race.
And Marco Andretti qualifies at 12th. She's quitting after this? She's retiring?
Yeah. Oh, she's done. She is absolutely done.
So how many wins did she get NASCAR and or IndyCar combined? Did she have? Did
you
have
really
some?
Gonna ask me that? Because I really would have to actually do the research.
Oh, I just thought you would know. I thought you followed that sport. I don't follow that sport.
No,
so.
I follow the sport, but I mean, I'd have to actually look that up.
Well, it doesn't matter then. So if anybody out there has the answer, go ahead and call in. We'd love to hear it. 929-477-3204. This is the 102nd running of the 500, which is pretty impressive, because then you start to think to yourself, that means in 1918 they had race cars. But,
and it was on bricks.
Yeah, you were telling me that last week. That sounds really cool, like a much more interesting road to drive on. But you also think that that would kind of damage tires quickly. you know, because of the
easily,
rougher surface.
Easily.
So, anyway, so we jump over to the NFL because there is a lot.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord.
NFL.
Good Lord.
So, first of all, we have kind of, I guess, I wouldn't say exposure or bringing people into the fold, but I don't know if people – I know people knew that Brett Favre had to go to a rehab center at one point in his career.
No one knows Brett Favre 1-2-3 route. through oh God, through three I'm sorry, I just brought up something. Through three rehabs. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so he had
we need to actually get this on the forefront. There are many NFL teams handing out painkillers like Tez dispensers. That's what I'm gonna say.
Well, that's the same thing that was happening on Air Force One from what we can tell with that guy
yes.
who got
yes,
a confirmation. And I think that we're seeing this all around the country that doctors are – look, it's so hard to get your money back. I work in the medical industry, healthcare industry.
Yeah,
and
you
I can
do.
Tell you right now, as much as you think doctors and pharmaceutical companies and things like that are super rich, you don't understand how much money they go into debt just to try to make a profit. I know you're going to say – you know, oh, woe is those, you know, people who are rich. And it's like, I understand that viewpoint. I'm definitely not in favor of richer people getting richer. But when you, let's say you go to the pharmacy and you're looking to get a prescription, right? And that prescription is kind of new. They're still making money off of it. They're trying to recoup their costs from creating the drug. And you go in there and your copay is $400. And you go, whoa, I have health insurance. You go, yeah, but this isn't covered under your formulary. So
my copay is zero.
Well, yeah, but that's a whole different issue. I wish I qualified for that. So you basically you're looking at places that are now giving out cards. They're called copay cards or PSP cards, patient savings programs. What they do is they basically take on the cost of that copay. Then
okay.
it's split
okay.
between
okay.
the pharmaceutical company, the pharmacy, and the federal government. And
sure.
But to get these paybacks, much like if you go to the doctor on Medicare or Medicaid, when you get charged your bill and you don't pay anything and then the bill goes to the government, these doctors and these pharmacies and things and pharmacists and pharmacy companies, they don't get their money back same day. It's not like they get it that afternoon. It can be to 12 months, sometimes 16 months behind. So just think if I said to you, don't worry, I'm going to pay for all your living expenses, but you're not going to get that first check until 16 months from now. Well, you say – well, I have to live for the next 16 months and live and stay alive and stay in a shelter and have food and everything like that. That's what it's like for pharmaceutical companies. It's what it's like for a lot of doctors is when they open a new practice or spin off a new subdivision for a new kind of drug, you're looking at 16 months to 30 months of losing money just to get to that point where you can start making money. And so it's not an easy thing to do. And this has caused a lot of doctors to kind of gravitate towards drugs that are extremely easy to get covered by insurance.
Clonazepam
is one of them. Yeah.
Yes.
Clonazepam, lorazepam, those are for anxiety medications. Some things like Xanax, but see, they will try and push you to clonazepam
they
or lorazepam.
To me, like Tez.
Well, that's a nice benefit because those are nice drugs. But I mean, the copay on a clonazepam, which is a generic, is not very expensive. It's usually, and even if you had full pay cash price, you're probably looking at $15. Whereas,
ten.
You know. If you're looking at an opiate now, opioids are very inexpensive, and doctors have handed them out very easily because it's something that's easy to get covered by a formulary. And because of this, it's easy to get bulk amounts, I believe, for NFL teams and other sports franchises. And then the idea is, look, just hand them one of these pills, and they'll be okay. And sports teams have tried to counteract – or not teams, the leagues have tried to counteract this a little bit by doing things like installing rules – for a player that gets hurt. And we saw this happen last night when the Cavaliers beat the Celtics. Kevin Love gets knocked down. He gets knocked around earlier on in the game. I think it was in the second quarter. And I actually didn't see the play, unfortunately, but I know he got knocked down. And they thought, like everyone in the booth was like, oh, he got a concussion. But the Cavaliers took him back to the locker room, announced he would not come back to play that game as they evaluated him. But they never, ever used the word concussion and still haven't. And they haven't
yes.
because of this rule, because there are four steps you have to pass as an NBA player if you're diagnosed with a concussion. And for him to be able to do that before Sunday when they play their final game will be hairy. And the last thing in the world the Cavaliers want is to not have Kevin Love in Game 7, which they're going to need. So
well, they have to. They have to. They have to have kids. I mean, LeBron James can't win this series alone.
No. And we saw last night, you know, the Cavaliers did win, and it took LeBron playing almost the entire game, even when his leg got injured, and nailing the multiple three-point daggers at the end of the game. So, you know, we do know that this is a problem. I don't think that anybody knows the easiest solution other than if a player's hurt, then sometimes they're going to need to just take more time to recover and suffer through the pain a little bit more so that they don't take these pills that can, you know, I mean, they can ruin some guys' lives. I mean, if you're not a superstar who's going to make millions and millions, this could put you into a lifelong addiction that you'll never get out of.
Well, Brett Favre went through 3 rehabs.
Right.
Because of it. Alcohol and painkillers.
Yeah. No, it took him a long time to chuck it. So,
Went to 3 rehabs.
4.
For alcohol and painkillers.
Now, which painkillers have you taken?
Oxys. God.
Well, there's a number of oxys. So there's oxycodone and oxycontin. Those are really different.
Oxycodones and
so oxycodone
and everything
is like,
else.
Is like a Vicodin, basically.
So, I mean, I went to 3 rehabs. I'm not going to lie to all my fans here. I went to 3 rehabs.
Do you feel it was effective?
No.
So, you know, there was an interesting piece on John Oliver's show last week tonight on last week's show. And the special was about rehab centers. And they talked about how rehab centers, the percentage of people who go to rehab and successfully kick a habit due to the rehab is almost zero. The only time people see some success is because they were forced to get sober, and while sober, made a conscious decision and said, I'm not going to do this anymore.
100% right.
Didn't backslide. And I can tell you from when I used to use nicotine, which I quit relatively easily compared to most people I know, but I did have to, you know, I've said to people before about when it comes to drugs, alcohol, anything. For me right now, I'm trying to kick sugar, and that's a really hard thing for me to do. And
oh, sugar's the worst. Sugar's the worst. Dude,
I'd say it's the most addictive.
I'll tell you what, that's the most addictive.
But it's amazing how when you have to, the first thing is you have to decide. If you have not decided, if you have your family saying you've got to quit, and your friends say you got to quit these drugs, and your job says you got to quit this shit, and you haven't made that decision, you haven't said to yourself, I've got to quit this, first of all, you're not going to quit at all.
No, you're
now,
not.
Even if you say that to yourself, even if you come to that position or that point where you're like, I need to quit, I don't want to do this anymore, it's killing me, that still doesn't mean you're going to quit, because that's what an addiction is. You feel an unnatural need in your brain. And I used to feel it when I was driving home and I was down to a half a can of Copenhagen, right? And, and for the record, I haven't used nicotine for, I think it's almost 15 years now, or maybe longer. But when I was addicted to it, I tell you what, I'd be driving home from work and I knew I had a half a can at home, a half of a can. I would be nervous and have anxiety and not feel okay unless I went to the store or the gas station
and got another
grabbed
can.
Another can or two, so I knew I had some backups. And that's what addiction is like. You just – you could even sometimes say, I don't want to do this anymore. And you can even say that to yourself while you're doing it. You know, you can be like, I need to quit this. This thing is horrible. It's going to destroy my teeth. It's going to destroy this. It's going to give me cancer. Going to do that. As you're putting another dip in or lighting up another cigarette, because that's addiction. And that's why I'm saying you got to just get to that point where
so
you want to quit.
Where do we go from here? Because Brett Favre is now on public record saying, I am addicted to alcohol and painkillers. Now the NFL has to take notice of this.
Right. I think that the first thing is I think there's a problem with the fact that they try and call it a disease now. And as an addict, it's not a disease. It's a mental condition. And I would say it's a mental defect maybe, because you have a receptor in your brain that was able to get conditioned to needing the drug, right? Because some people can drink their whole – like I'll never be an alcoholic ever because I just don't like alcohol enough. Now, doesn't mean I don't like to have a drink. Doesn't mean that I won't go out and party sometimes. Of course I do. And I love champagne brunches, and I love a beer during softball.
And when that sports bar opens next to us, we're going to be over there broadcasting from there.
Even though you're going to have a sports bar coming out. And then, like going to a microbrewery. I mean, Colorado is famous for its microbreweries. I love going to them. I don't love them. I don't love beer. I don't love alcohol. So I'll never be an addict to it. But I did love nicotine. So I became an addict to it. I love sugar, so I am an addict to that, and I'm trying really hard to quit. And I've also found out the insane cost of trying to eat healthy when, boy, I tell you what, you go to the store to buy better materials to make food, like almond flour and Crisco.
Almond flour is so expensive.
And coconut virgin oil, you know, and stuff like that. It's insane. These things cost 10 times more.
Oh, I know.
The stuff you're used to getting that's full of preservatives and full of garbage. So
you can't eat healthy cheaply.
No. So I guess what we have to do for this epidemic, you know, not only in this country, but in the sporting world, is that we just have to get to a point where we can say, look, it's a mental defect. That's nothing to be ashamed of. It's not your fault that you have that defect. People can say, well, it's your fault because you use that product. Well, but you didn't know, and you see everybody else having a good time, so you think there's no big deal. And then by the time you find out you're addicted, you're addicted. So people need to think of it, you know, more logically. And yeah, you can say, oh, you know, I taught my kids never to have a drink, never to have a smoke, never to do this. But you know what? That doesn't compete with societal opinion. And we are seeing a benefit of that. Cigarettes have become so expensive with taxes, and they're so shunned in terms of advertising and, you know, talking about how they're deadly and constant reinforcement that they're a horrible thing. And now, how often do you see somebody smoking? I mean, it doesn't even kind of shock you. Like when I see somebody walk outside to smoke a cigarette, if it's not a bar where, you know, if we're at a bar, you're drinking, everybody wants to have a cigarette. But, you know, you see people like walking outside of my work. I see like four people that I work with that smoke, and I'm just shocked. You're like, there are still people that smoke, you know? And a lot of them, of course, have switched over to vaporizers, which, you know, guys, if you're smoking on one of those cigarette e-vapors, look at yourself in the mirror when you're using those, and that might help you quit because it's not a very flattering picture. It actually looked a lot more cool.
This is Cassandra from Twin Peaks Arapahoe, and you're listening to The Sports Offensive with JP and Mark on blogtalkradio.com.
I
hit it by accident.
I guess
I was going to tell you.
I
was going to tell you we're going to go there, but I hit it by accident.
Go where?
Just go over to here and hit it by accident.
So we'll see what happens with this going forward. You know, I mean, I don't know for sure what the answer is. I don't think anybody knows for sure what the answer is, but maybe if we can take the scorn off of it and look at it as something that, you know what, these aren't good for you.
All right.
You know, it's not a good thing to use these. You don't want to use these unless you're in absolute, you know, abject pain. But, you know, hey, things like fentanyl, I'm sorry, if you've got, you know, stomach cancer, what else are you going to do? I mean, you have to take these things.
The vape pens. What do you think about those?
Oh, I was just saying I think they look goofy.
Of course they do.
The ones that they have for marijuana out here in Colorado, of course, everything is legal here. Those don't look so bad because they just look like a long, skinny cigarette, basically.
Right.
But the weird thing is the tobacco ones have those huge chambers with the oil or the fragrant liquid or whatnot. And then to the nicer ones have that big, huge case in the bottom, then with like a spout coming up. And that's what I think is funny. When you're just walking around and people don't like take a drag like they do off a cigarette, these people just suck on the vaporizer until like they can't even hold more in their lungs, and then they take a breath out. And it kind of makes you think of like Snackwell cookies, right? It's like they think it's not as damaging, so they do twice as much. And
you can pretty much suck that down for like 15 seconds.
Oh, at least. Yeah, I've seen some, you know, if you're breathing out a huge puff of smoke after using a vaporizer, that's a lot.
Yes, it is.
Shouldn't have much smoke. It should have a little bit of smoke. That's the whole point. That's why you do that. So anyway, I'm not going to pretend that we know the answer to this. But
no, we don't.
So the other big issue, and this one is crazy, and there's a number of things that we need to address on this. And I recommend to anybody who didn't hear my show, I did a special on the national anthem protest all the way back when it was a huge issue.
Oh, you did it September, yeah.
I
was actually on the East Coast.
You were in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
called
yeah.
it from the airport.
Yep.
And, you know, the reason I did that show was not to really defend or abscond the position that they were doing or what they were doing, but just because of the fact that there was so much misinformation. And that's the way that our society seems to function in terms of media and communication, is it's not the issue that gets talked about. It's the way that they're protesting it that gets talked about. You know, people saying, oh, these people are walking around and they're in the streets, run them over. It's like, why don't you, before you do that, why don't you just think for a second, what is it they think is so important that they're going to walk out in front of cars? What is it that's so important that someone's going to kneel down in front of a flag when they know they're going to get screamed at? And you can disagree or agree with what they're protesting, and that's fine. You know, like you know, I mean, look, you know, extremely conservative people tend to not agree with what Kaepernick was kneeling in front of the flag, just as like extremely liberal people couldn't stand the lynching mobs that walked around with pictures of Obama being lynched with a Tea Party, right? You can say you don't agree with them, but at least try to understand why they're protesting. And if you're one of the protesters, for God's sake, have a reason why you're protesting, which that's even more infuriating is if you don't know why you're protesting. And I've seen that with a lot of people.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah, baby. Hallelujah.
You know, Kaepernick didn't go out of his way to make a big deal. In fact, he had been doing what he was doing with the kneeling during the anthem for, I believe, 4 weeks before it made media attention, right? Before someone saw it and recorded it. Same thing with Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn Lynch was doing it for a while, and no one even realized it until it became the big deal, and then Trump said, don't do it, and then all the teams kind of stood up for it. So anyway, what this all did, and I love that some people are saying, you know, here's the misconceptions we need to go over first, right? So number one, and, you know, we've got a local station here that we both like called The Fan. They've got some really good programs on there. They got The Drive. They've got Brandon and Stokely. They've got, you know, Cecil Lammy, and they've got The Morning Show with Schlereth Stink, you know, great shows. And every one of those shows had a whole bunch of people calling in. And one of the first things, what is with the taking, you know, objectifying or violating the First Amendment? So, folks, again, you all know I'm liberal, but I cannot say this enough times, and I cannot stop getting upset about this. The First Amendment of the Constitution protects you from freedom of speech from the government. Okay? That's it. The government. It has nothing to do with business at all. Business has no rule to allow you to say what you want to do. Business has no rule to let you make them look bad. Business has no rule for you to embarrass the product or hurt profits. Period.
Thank you for saying that, because that is the First Amendment.
But it's so ignorant. It's just the First Amendment is only – I mean, there's three parts of the First Amendment, or four parts. But the part about free speech, you know, and not in not forcing the – A is not – is saying the freedom of the press, right? So the press can report whatever they want, which is something that we're seeing a lot of issues with lately, because some people are buying up so many of the stations and the newspapers that there's so few voices now going into media. And then you've got the president and the rest of the Congress attacking media, saying that they're lying or they're doing what they don't like because they don't like the stories that come out. So we're losing that checks and balances that we have. But the fact of the matter is the government has not said one word in terms of legislation to NFL players saying you can't kneel during the anthem. Despite the fact that Trump says a lot of stupid stuff, Trump says nothing but stupid stuff. He's ignorant and he's not very well educated. But that doesn't change the fact that Trump can say that they shouldn't do it. Trump can tweet as many misspelled and poor grammar tweets as he wants to about it. It doesn't change the fact that if he doesn't sign legislation,
and
has not violated the First Amendment.
The governor, the governator actually said nothing to the same tune. He's like, okay, kneeling is whatever. I mean, they just said that in NFL football.
What did Schwarzenegger say?
No, not Schwarzenegger. I mean, I said the governator because, I mean, I call Pete Rizzo or I'm sorry, the commissioner or the governor.
Oh, the commissioner of the NFL?
Yes. I mean, okay. I mean, he said, all right, you're not going to sit and kneel during all this.
You know, I usually will defend.
Stay in the locker room is what he said.
Right, which is, you know, it's an interesting thing is what happened is that they passed, they passed a rule because Goodell came out and said there was a vote. But then a number of teams says, no, we didn't vote. We never voted on this. It was just
no one
what
voted.
It is the most powerful owners, i.e. the richest ones, Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones, all these guys who are super rich, and they don't like seeing profits being hurt no matter who is doing it, right? I mean, Robert Kraft has shown that he only cares so much about his team because he's been willing to kind of, you know, smack down Belichick and smack down Brady and kind of different things because in the end, what matters is the profit that they're making. And this is why this whole thing got passed, because NFL owners are worried that they were losing some market share, the anthem protest. Of course, objective evidence says that's not true because the NFL Pro Bowl outdrew any single game of the current Western and Eastern Conference Finals in NBA. So if you're pulling more people for your boring all-star game that no one I know has ever cared about or watched, and you're still outdrawing what basketball is in their conference finals, you're not having trouble with viewership. And all those people saying that they're boycotting the NFL because again, they're too ignorant to know what the protest is and somehow think that they're protesting the flag or the amendments or the anthem or something. Again, shouldn't even be called the national anthem protest, because you're not protesting the anthem. They're protesting social inequality. Whether you agree with that fact or not is fine. But when you start saying, no, they're disrespecting the flag, they're disrespecting the national anthem, they're disrespecting this. Look, folks, if you're utilizing something that symbolizes the rights you have as a citizen, that's the definition of patriotic. So you don't have to like their position, but you can't actually pretend that they're being disrespectful by utilizing the thing that so many people died for, which is the right to have your own opinion in a country, in the only country in the world that was founded on the avoidance of tyranny. So now, as far as this rule that was passed, so like you said, JP, they are allowed to be in the locker room. You don't have to come out on the field. And that is a change, because there was a rule, the prior rule said that you had to be on the field. So that's no longer a rule. You don't have to be on the field anymore. You can stay in the locker room. Now, if you come out, you need to stand. If you don't stand, if you do anything disrespectful, it doesn't say kneeling. It says disrespectful in their opinion to the national anthem being played, which, you know what? This could be an NFL determination. So what else could it be? Maybe a fist raised in the air?
God, a fist?
Sitting
a
down?
A fist bump? It could be like you flexing. I have no idea.
Dabbing, right?
Dabbing.
By
yes,
the way,
please.
Real quick, for some of those people out there, especially if you're parents or grandparents and you don't know this, because I'm starting to see this in like kindergarten photos and things where people think it's cool, because the kids think it's cool to show the dabbing. I don't care if people smoke marijuana or not, okay, especially living in Colorado. But understand, dabbing, okay, dabbing is a kind of smoking of marijuana. It's using an oil, or it's not even an oil, it's more of a wax. It's kind of a liquidy wax. And it's smoking that. It's called dabbing, right? They'll say, do you even dab, bro? It's saying, do you smoke marijuana in that way? And it's a very intense way to smoke. I've never done it because there's no way I could handle it. But it's like if you wanted to smoke, I guess, the equivalent of like 4 or 5 pipefuls of marijuana
right,
at once,
right?
You get really, really high. And dabbing, the dance where you put one face into an elbow and the other one sticking out the other way, okay, that symbolizes coughing after taking a huge dabbing hit. That is what Cam Newton is doing. That's what Colin Kaepernick was doing. That's what your kids are doing. Now, I'm not saying that all the kids know what the dabbing thing is, especially if they're young, but don't encourage
it. They
have
no idea.
You don't know what it means either. It's like, come on, folks. You're actually saying to your kid, yeah, do a mimicking thing of smoking marijuana. And while, again, I'm not against any drugs per se, I would not promote them to somebody who's under the age of 8th grade for, you know, for crying out loud. So anyway, that's just another little side PA.
Sidekick. Sidekick.
PA for all of you guys who don't know that's what dabbing means. Because, you know, it's just like, I love when I see this Facebook video of a guy who was sitting there watching like the stupidest cartoon in the world because his daughter loved it. He's like, well, if my daughter loves it, I'm going to know what it is and I'm going to try and love it too. So you know what? That's a good parent right there, because your kid's not going to be causing problems, because your kid
right.
is going to feel like they have a value, you know? So anyway, back to the anthem rule here. So this is not part of the CBA, right? This is not part of that
nope,
collective bargaining
not
agreement.
Even close.
And this is going to be a big deal when that comes up next
oh,
year.
Oh, I know it.
Okay,
is.
So we know it's going to be – that and marijuana testing is going to be big in terms of this. you got to mute that. So basically
– All right, Cody Unser is trying to get on the show right now.
Oh, okay. Does she want to call in?
She's trying. Her phone is
does she
well,
have,
I'm not going to
sure
say –
Are we sure she has the right number?
Well, her phone is a little effed.
Well, okay, that's fine. I'm just saying, does she have the right number?
Yeah, she has the right number.
So, Cody, if you can hear us, it's 929-477-3204. Give it another try. If you pop up on our screen, we'll be able to let you
And
the
you
show.
Can get there by a payphone, or I'll pay for the payphone.
Payphone. If you can find a payphone, then please let us know where it is, because we haven't seen one in a long
I
time.
I have never seen – you know what? No, I saw one on Colfax.
Really?
I saw one on Colfax.
Need one for the streetwalkers. They got to have some way to communicate.
So what did you try and say there?
I'm saying Colfax is full of streetwalking hookers. Anybody who's been downtown knows that one. Stay away from Colfax. It's just like when you – just like you want to stay away from MLK Drive because there's going to be violence going down, you want to stay away from Colfax because there are going to be some hookers probably on the street. So and probably servicing people on the street. It's kind of a – just don't drive there if you're not local, okay? Make sure you know where you're going. Now, the 49ers abstain from voting. They went out of their way, and I love what they're doing here, because they're trying to point out how ridiculous all of this is to get mad at people for trying to make a statement, especially when you consider all that really ever had to happen was somebody in a position of conservative enforcement.
Okay.
Just acknowledge that people of our minorities, non-white, non-Caucasians, are disproportionately treated poorly to Caucasians. Not that no Caucasians are treated well or poorly, not that no minorities are treated with respect. Of course they are, because most cops are good people. But it's just like in anything, you got to have your 5%ers that are crap. And these 5%ers are going out of their way to profile people. And it's even possible for minorities to profile minorities. It does happen. You get biases built in, especially if you see something happen repeatedly. If you're working in an ER, you constantly see poor people coming in who are addicted to drugs and are abusing it and deal with their ODs, and you start thinking, well, all poor people are just, you know, drug addict losers. No, the ones that you see are, and that's why you develop that opinion, right? So this has been happening with minorities in terms of law enforcement, and that's the whole reason for this. So if anyone in a higher level of but it has to be a white person. It has to be a conservative person, because, you know, liberals and people of color are generally already, you know, on board with this. But it just seems amazing to me that nobody could just have come out and said, you know what, there's obviously a problem and we got to figure out what's the cause and try and fix it. If they had just said that, if Trump came out and said that, or Jeff Sessions said that, or who else is a high law enforcement person? The DOJ is pretty high, and the president, obviously. You know, these are old white men from conservative areas. If they had just said, you know what, there's obviously a problem, you know, let's work with people who are doing things correctly, and let's try and get this figured out. Boom, there you go. It's all over.
Done.
It's all over. You got all Colin Kaepernick ever wanted was recognition. And now over 2.5 years, or 2 years, whatever it's been, a year and a half, nothing but a concerted effort to not acknowledge what he was protesting. And that's it. All you had to do was acknowledge why he was protesting, and this whole thing would have become a different issue and could have moved forward. But instead, it's just stuck spinning its wheels with all these people who have no idea what they're talking about and won't bother to learn the facts because, you know, reading is hard and no one wants to read anymore, which is weird. Probably also why baseball is dying in popularity, because asking people to go read stats is probably like, you mean I have to go read numbers and do math?
I was just going to say that.
It's like, don't worry, batting average is not that hard of a statistic. It's just numbers dividing each other. But I can tell you from helping some people that I know who are taking classes now with math, it's a shocking how little math comprehension most people have. Now, the Niners are doing a great step here. They are saying nothing is going to happen during the anthem now. So no concession sales, no checking in people through the front gates, no checking their bags for harmful materials before they get let in, no serving drinks, no vendors walking around, no cameramen changing angles, and no scoreboard operation. Because they're going to say, if we're going to be so ridiculous as to say that the only thing that's respectful to the flag is to stand there, standing up, hands behind your back, staring at the flag, then everyone in the stadium is going to have to.
So I'm going to tell you this right now. The Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, which we hold in such regard, they have always had the policy, when the national anthem is played, all sales stop. They take off their hats and they actually sing the anthem.
They should.
And I love it. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if people had just gravitated towards accepting, or at least acknowledging the message, then everyone's going to be like, oh, so maybe we should think about this issue. Now everyone's working together. And that's when we're strong, is when everyone works together. And this divisive politics that's taken over this country is ridiculous. And I don't understand why one side seems so absolutely determined to do that. But you know what? It obviously works, right? Because they got into Congress. So
They did. So, oh, well.
Well, we just know look, we have a country that watches the Kardashians with great interest and made Kylie Jenner a household name despite the fact that she's never,
I actually
ever
have
done
no
anything.
Idea why we watch the Kardashians.
I mean, I've never seen an episode, but
I never have either. Why do you watch them?
Because people love the idea of growing up rich and never having to work for anything and then be
those girls aren't rich. They got big asses.
You don't think the Kardashian women are rich?
No, man.
You do realize that
big asses.
You realize
big asses.
Right. And implants are not cheap. How do you think they got those?
You know what? I don't even think they have implants. Big asses.
Okay. Well, I guess you don't think they're rich. I would disagree. I'd say Kim Kardashian is probably worth $250 million. But, you know, her father was an extremely wealthy lawyer and a land developer. Kind of like Trump's.
Father or mother?
Her father, who's dead, who was O.J. Simpson's lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And, but, you know, it's just like Trump's grandmother, right? He's rich because his grandmother made a big company and he got the proceeds from it. Now, the Jets have taken a different step in terms of their opinion on this thing. And that is the Jets have said any player that decides to come out and protest during the anthem, right? Not protest the anthem, during the anthem. Is there any way you can turn that ringer off? So they have said they will fund any fines. Technically, this is how it works anyway. The NFL, because the way that works is that the NFL is not who employs these players. The players are employed by their teams.
Yes.
The teams are all members of a cartel called the NFL. Now, the cartel always has that kind of sketchy name.
I love the fact that you said cartel.
Because it is a cartel.
It is?
A cartel is a group of similar or group of companies in the same industry that band together to function under a one set of rules to make the things more profitable.
Exactly right.
Which is the most important or the most known cartel in the world is the OPEC, right? The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. And this is, you know, Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, all these countries that have big time oil exports, Russia, they're part of OPEC. And what it means is they work together to decide how much supply to put out on the market to control the price of oil. Same thing is going on here with the NFL. These teams all work together. These individual companies, these individual teams work together in this cartel to effectively create a monopoly so that other leagues can't compete. And you can't work for another league. You know, we saw the XFL come out. They couldn't survive. We saw the USFL. They didn't survive. There's a new one coming up next year. They're not probably going to survive.
Well, Vince is going to try another one.
Right. And and all the power to them. I love competition. I love that idea. But – to overtake a monopoly is very hard, and eventually the NFL is a monopoly, and that's why you hear the talk about them being having antitrust waivers. Same thing that MLB has. They're allowed to be a monopoly because the government decide that they are a more effective
business. Let's look at that real quick, because a monopoly is not allowed in this society.
Well,
I mean,
so you can't have a trust. A trust is a monopoly, right?
Yes.
Antitrust legislation that was passed by mostly like a lot of it was passed by Teddy Roosevelt back in the 1900s. This is when the banks were you know screwing people over. Now the banks are back to screwing people over because we basically repealed all of those antitrust laws
for the
most part. But the NFL has to receive a waiver in order to be allowed to function as a monopoly. Same thing happened here. You probably now this is starting to change with solar power, but you probably don't have more than one choice for your power bill. You probably, if you're in Colorado, in Northern Colorado, or if you're in like where I live in Broomfield, Boulder, whatever, you pretty much have to use Xcel. They're the only company offering power to
all this power here is not Xcel.
So you
I have no
Xcel.
Idea.
Who did you pay your power bill to?
I have no idea. It just shows up on my bill.
So how do you know it's not Xcel?
It's not Xcel. Trust me.
Oh, well, next time you get your bill, look and see who it is. But you must be getting some other
company. No, it's a billing company that just charges me. Outrageous prices. Thank you.
But you don't know who it is?
No. They won't they actually won't tell me.
They won't really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
Oh, it's inert, it's power, it's electric, it's lights, it's this.
Well, okay,
gas
think of it this way instead. You're only allowed to have Dish Network here for cable, correct?
Thank you. All right, so that perfect example.
They were given a natural monopoly by this building.
Yeah,
because they
monopoly, because which is illegal, right?
No, it's not illegal. It's only illegal if you're considered violating trust statutes, which is complicated. And obviously, in our country with common law, it gets even more complicated every time a judge makes a decision, especially because of the fact that our appellate courts are not held to the same jurisdiction as a local court or the Supreme Court. So that's why it just gets really confusing really fast. But
it does.
So the Jets are willing to pay the fine for any player that goes out there and does protest during the anthem, not protesting the anthem, during the anthem, and they will pay that fine for that player. Now, the whole thing is that the reason the NFL is – well, I was talking about the whole thing about the cartel is because that's why teams get fined if a player does this and not the player, because the NFL can't fine a player for something that's not in the CBA. And you're going to say, well, what about the uniforms? They fine them for their uniforms. That's in the CBA. The collective bargaining agreement says you must wear the standard uniform of the NFL.
Okay, so the Jets owner, it's very easygoing on what his players do when it comes to the anthem. I mean, he already said it. He's like, I really don't care what those guys do. I will pay the fine.
Right. And I mean, I personally would be the same way. I'd be like, you know what? If you're going to be, if you're going to force my team to stand and come out and acknowledge during the national anthem instead of getting ready for the damn game, then I'm not going to say that they have to do anything else. And let's not forget, just like in God We Trust on our money, playing the national anthem before a football game is not a long time tradition, folks. This is a more recent tradition, like singing God Bless America in the seventh inning of a baseball game. These are new traditions that people then just start assuming after 10 years they've been there forever. Tells you why it's so easy to rewrite history, right? Just convince one generation and no one will ever know any different. Even if the facts are laid out in front of people, they'll still ignore them. So, I mean, it's all very inconsistent, and I agree with what the Niners are doing. I think everyone should say everything else in the stadium stops. And you know what? I don't want to hear any single person that gets mad about people protesting during the anthem. I don't ever want to find out that you are in your home watching a game and you did not stand up and take off your hat and salute when the national anthem came on TV, period. Because if you did, you're a hypocrite and you're an idiot.
My hand goes over my chest every single time it comes on.
Right. And, you know, there is some different there was that interesting thing that kind of brought up was what is considered respectful flag code-wise or whatever for addressing the flag. My grandpa taught me that standing tall with your hands either clasped at the wrist in front of your stomach or your waistline, I guess, or held behind your back was respectful to the flag.
Yep.
You could also, of course, you could put your hand over your heart,
yep.
But any three of those were acceptable. On the actual flag code, it's not. Not all three of those are considered acceptable. Now, why in the world there's a flag code in a country that's supposed to be free, I'll never understand. But, you know, that goes into the whole thing about our fact that we have no civics understanding in our country. Now, that's kind of all the thing I wanted to say about it. Was there something that you wanted to interject about the protests?
You know what? Interjecting about the protest, it's 2 years post Kaepernick. And quite frankly, the guy doesn't have a job. And it's not because he doesn't deserve one. He just sucks that badly that he doesn't deserve a job.
You know my feelings on him when there was the talk about him coming to Denver. And from what we've learned now is that he actually would have been come to Denver if he had been willing to get – if the Broncos had been willing to pay what he wanted them to pay them.
Yep,
and he
I know.
And the Broncos said, no, we're not willing to pay quite that much. And so – I did not want Kaepernick at all because I agree. I don't think he's a great player. I don't think
he's
a bad
not
player,
even – he's an okay quarterback.
He's
a guy that will back up somebody.
Right. I think that – I did think it was odd that the Tennessee Titans did not sign him as a backup to Mariota when Mariota got hurt because they ran a very similar system. Same thing in Seattle. Run a very similar system. Now, Kaepernick is more of a run first, throw second guy, and he's not an accurate passer. And he's not he's very telegraphing. He telegraphs where he throws the ball. If you get him scrambling out of the pocket, you can get him in trouble.
Your problem in Seattle is he said, I'm not going to stand for the anthem.
Well, I would have thought Seattle was a team that cared the least about that. The owner.
No, he came right out and said it. He's like, I will not stand for the anthem.
Oh, I know. I'm not saying he didn't say that. I didn't know that Seattle said that was why they didn't sign him.
No, that's why they didn't sign him.
Well, that's interesting because Pete Carroll is definitely a social justice person as well as Paul Allen, who owns the team. So that's a little interesting. Do you want to thank Santiago for burritos for this morning? Thank you, JP,
of course,
for getting those.
Thank you to Santiago's Burritos right off of Havana right here. Hamden and Monaco.
I mean, they're dang well. They're dang near everywhere.
Those are so good. It's unbelievable.
They are. Especially on I don't get the hot ones, but boy, half and halves are hot for me.
I mean, come on, radio show, Mile.
Yeah, I work with some girls who get the hot and still don't think they're hot enough, and you're just like, wow. Of course, I've seen the wings that you eat, so yeah,
good Lord.
My guess is you could take a hot one. Just real quick, We're actually kind of already past the halfway point on the show.
Oh, so yeah, we are.
Why don't we jump back into that trivia question? I'll read this again because I don't know the answer. You do.
Oh, I know the answer.
So who is the only driver in history to win a Formula One championship, an Indy 500 championship, and a Daytona 500, which is the granddaddy of all the NASCAR races? So
say Daytona one more time.
Daytona?
Yep, there you go.
Oh, did I say it differently?
You were like, Daytona.
Daytona. And which is like, you know, the granddaddy course, basically, which is oddly the first race of the year. But I guess tradition, right? Something like that.
Yes,
who knows?
Tradition.
I don't know much about racing.
I'll tell you right now.
So my guess, I'm going to say, since Unser is the person that we're trying to have on the show, I'm going to guess it has to be an Andretti. The only one whose name I really know for certain is Mario. So that's my guess.
Okay, Mario is the correct answer.
Boom.
Mario won the 500 in 69, 66 won the Daytona 500, 78 won the Formula One Championship, IROC Series of 5 years, 77, 78, 79, 80, 81. So Mario Andretti actually won all the races. So.
Well, congratulations to Mario. That's a pretty big accomplishment, and no one's duplicated it. And, you don't see many people doing Indy driving and 500 driving, usually, or NASCAR driving. Usually, if they do NASCAR and something else, they'll do
the Indy. He's the only one. I'm going to tell you a really quick story because this is going to be my favorite story of on Earth. I was riding a bicycle with my friend Steven Cunha, BMX bike. Not even, you know, multiple gears. I heard a high-pitched scream on 512. It's on one lane road each way.
512 is a highway?
Yes. Oh. It's not even a highway. It's a one lane road. All of a sudden, a white Countach blew past us.
A what?
A white Countach.
Okay. What? So those of us who don't know.
Lambo.
Oh, a Lamborghini.
Yep.
Okay.
I rode up to Mario's house. And I stopped at his driveway, and I said, this is when he used to live right next to Nazareth High School. I said, Mario, thank you. And he's like, thanks, guys. I'm like, keep on rocking, man.
So the Andretti's live in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Dude, he goes to my church.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You go to church?
I don't go to church. Oh. He just goes to my church.
I guess technically I have a church, if you consider the one I went to as a kid. I pretty much avoid going to church like the plague, but I did go to St. James Lutheran Church. So I'm actually baptized Lutheran. So
Lutheran. All right. Holy Family Catholic Church. He goes right there, and he was right next to now his new house is now next to Calandra Cheese. And I'll tell you what, it's got a 12-car garage.
That sounds like Jay Leno. Or
I love it.
There's some other people that have those like garages with elevators in them and things like that. It's like, man, that must to just have, you know, all of that. But anyway, so cruising on over to – let's just do baseball first, then we can dive into the playoffs here. So Marcell Ozuna. Marcell Ozuna is an outfielder for the St. Louis Cardinals. He was brought over in the offseason in the fire sale from the Marlins. He's a very, very good player. I mean, he's an excellent player. Last year, he was crushing it. This year, he's not. He's batting .253 with three homers and 22 RBIs, which that's actually a league-wide thing. There is a huge hitting outage going on, and no one knows quite why. The Rockies, one of the most notorious hitting teams in the world, has an average batting average of like .245. It's Arenado, I think, is the only guy over 300 or close.
And Arenado pretty much destroyed the clubhouse the other day.
Did he? Well, he actually hit a home run yesterday, which was nice.
All right, yesterday, but the day before, he destroyed everything.
What, took a bat to the
Oh, he took a bat. He took the Gatorade bottle. He slammed everything.
Well, I can understand the frustration. I mean, don't get me wrong; they're in first place. So it's not like it's the worst thing in the world, but
no.
But they got to be getting nervous because they so why can't you turn the ringer off on that?
I'm not sure. I have no idea.
Do you want me to try?
No.
Usually if you pull down the top on a Samsung and then tap that speaker thing until it has a line through it, then usually that's when it's over.
No, I'm trying to get the answers on the show.
I don't know why you'd mean to have the ringer on. But anyway, I hope that's not too distracting out there. So anyway, Ozuna overslept the other day.
Overslept?
Yeah. So he was benched. Must have been a day game, I assume. So he was benched for it. Now, usually you wouldn't think that was that big of a deal, except for the fact that they have an up-and-comer, Tyler O'Neill, I think his name is, who, when he has played so far on his second call-up, has been phenomenal. And the Cardinals have a crowded outfield. They've got Dexter Fowler along with Marcell Ozuna, and they've got Tommy Pham. And all three of these guys were highly drafted in fantasy drafts.
I dropped Tommy Pham.
You dropped him?
Yep.
Isn't he having a good year?
He's having a great year, but he's not producing on a level I need to.
Oh, man. I wish you were in my league and I could get him. But
no, because he only plays outfield. I need multiple players to do multiple spots.
Oh, you have more. You have some positions that you're shy on.
Oh God, yeah. I mean,
well,
there
was nobody else in the outfield you could have dropped.
No one even close.
Is it a 10-man league?
Yes.
Okay, well that makes a little bit more sense then. That would be more people available. I just think it's interesting that they might actually, you know, there was like thinking there's no way for that O'Neill guy, that rookie, to get into the team lineup. This could be it. If Ozuna continues to play terrible and not in good graces. Boy, you could just see him lose his position. That's a big deal for a guy that was traded for a lot of pieces because he did so well. But the Cardinals have that problem, which is usually the opposite. Usually the Cardinals bring in somebody, and they would
Cardinals
play great.
Usually have a great minor league system.
Yeah, or if they bring in a free agent or a trade, that guy fits. It was a system. It was a culture, like you know the Patriots or whatnot. And it seems like they've lost that culture because – it doesn't happen anymore because Dexter Fowler came over a couple of years ago, and he ended up coming.
Oh, good Lord, Dexter Fowler.
And he hasn't done hardly anything for him.
He hasn't done anything.
So it's weird. It's weird what's happening there. Talking about outfielders, how about Old Nails? One of your favorites, I'm sure. Lenny Dykstra.
Okay, Lenny Dykstra. All right, let me actually give this caveat. Lenny Dykstra has a lot of problems.
Yeah, he's had a number of problems.
You can go ahead and tell me what you want to talk about, but Lenny Dykstra has a lot of problems.
So we all know about the things that happened previously with his money, right?
Yes.
He invested in some Ponzi schemes,
yep,
and some other stuff, and it all blew up in the space. So I guess Lenny had an Uber somewhere, and during the drive, he says, I want to change the destination. Well, the Uber driver says, no, we got to go to the destination on the thing here. And you got to realize a lot of people who do Uber aren't doing it as a full-time taxi. I mean, sure,
of course
some people
not.
Are.
Of course not.
But other people are like, I just do this when I go home from work because I have a long commute. So I look for somebody who lives near where I live that wants an Uber ride, and that way I can make money just driving home, right? Makes
yeah.
a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I have a friend that lives near the airport here, and so they constantly pick up fares coming from the airport when they go into Boulder, and then people grab people in Boulder who want to go to the airport because she lives only about 3 or 4 miles away from the airport. So
yep.
it works out perfect for her, and she makes money back and forth every day. In fact, she's made a lot of money doing that. So anyway, the driver said to Lenny, no, I can't do that. We're going to where we are. He says, okay, he says.
All right.
We don't have any
now,
proof on
now,
the card.
Now, get the nickname Nails.
That's what I started with.
Nails.
Yeah.
Nails. All right, let's keep going.
That's what I called him to start with, was Nails.
I know you did. I just had to bring that back up.
All right, so Lenny pulls a gun, apparently, is what the driver says. The driver turned into a police parking lot and honked on his horn and jumped and ran out of the car. Now, why you would run out of the car when someone's pointing a gun at you, I don't have any idea. Now, the cops... you know, heard the commotion. They came over. The cops searched the car and Lenny. They did not find a gun anywhere in the parking lot or anything. So that part seems